morning. Welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. I'm Mike Gorrell. I'm this morning's board rep. There are several announcements. One to our visitors. Please join Reverend Hobart and a few members after service for a cup of coffee and a chat. We'd like to get to know you and answer any questions that you may have. We will meet in the minister's office right outside the office, right after the service. Please join us. Also, there's a new member ceremony coming up on February 3rd. If you've decided you'd like to join us, please see Chris White. You want to stand up, Chris? Right over there, after the service. And to that end, there's a UU orientation class today at noon. If you're interested in learning more about Unitarian Universalism and the Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church, please join them for that class. Lunch will be served, and there is child care. I invite you to greet those sitting around you.
Good morning.
If you are visiting us today, we particularly welcome you. Please sign the guest ledger on the visitor's table in the foyer. There's a variety of information available on that table about our church and Unitarian Universalism. Help yourself to anything that interests you. I will be with Reverend Hobart in his office after if, like I mentioned before, any of the visitors want to stop and have a cup of coffee with us. If you are visiting us with your children, it is our custom for the children to remain with us until after the story for all ages, at which time they go to their religious education classes. Your child is welcome to join them or remain in the service. If you would like to go along and observe your child's class, please do so. There is a nursery that's just out the doors to my right across the entryway if there's need for child care during the service. Classes will end at 11:15 a.m., at which time you can pick your children up from their classes. We always enjoy getting to know our guests. If any members have broadcast today, we would be pleased if you would introduce them. If any guests have brought themselves and feel comfortable doing so, this is a good time to introduce yourself. We would enjoy getting to know you. Everyone is invited to gather in the social hall after the service for refreshments and conversation. The conversation corner is a good place to gather for further discussion of the service. Please put your cell phones on silence mode during the service. I hope you find this morning's service enlightening. Our speaker today is Jim.
Thank you. We come together to give life to what none of us can alone offer. Together, we give form and we give character to our beloved religious community. Together, we support one another through all the times of our lives, achievement and failure, opportunity and challenge, continuity and change, doubt and conviction, strength and weakness of body and spirit. Together, we educate our children and ourselves in the many ways of being human and being religious, in the ways of developing our own religious perspective and ethical action. Together, we can support and sponsor ways of compassion and justice and love for the world's people and for the earth itself. Together, we welcome all people of goodwill and open minds and hearts into our midst. Together, we gather to celebrate our shared religious ways by word and song, by silence and by music, by story and by sermon, by candles lit to represent our joys and our concerns, by prayer and meditation, by each pledging our resources of time and talent and money to support and sustain our religious community. As we come together for worship, once again we light our flaming chalice, a bright symbol of our liberal religious faith. Our opening hymn is number 361, Enter, Rejoice, and Come In, and I invite you to rise in body and spirit and sing with enthusiasm.
Join with me in our ingathering, number 442 in your hymnals. We'll read this responsively, and you get the italics. We bid you welcome who come with weary spirit seeking rest. We bid you welcome who come with hope in your heart. We bid you welcome who are seekers of a new faith. We bid you welcome who enter this hall as a homecoming. Whoever you are, whatever you are, wherever you are on your journey,
we bid you welcome.
Join me down here in the front. It's youthful in age or in spirit. I'm Hugh Helen.
Hello. Well, today is January the 6th, 2013. Does anybody here know what January the 6th is in the Christian calendar? I see a hand in the toward the back. Yes. It's called Epiphany. It's January 6th. Now, that word, that big word, epiphany, has a meaning that I think maybe everybody will understand a little better than they understand that word. Epiphany means appearance, or it means to appear. So we might talk about the epiphany or the appearance of the sun in the morning at dawn when it comes up over the horizon. Or we might refer to the epiphany or the appearance of the moon at night when it comes out and we can see it. Now, in that Christian calendar, what appearance or epiphany is reported to have happened on January the 6th? Okay, should I tell you then? Well, that is the day when Christian mythology and tradition says that the three wise men, the Magi, arrived in Bethlehem to visit the newborn baby Jesus. 12 days after Christmas, January the 6th, that's when the story says that the wise men arrived to bring their gifts to Jesus. Now, that story is told in the book of Matthew in the Bible about these three wise men who came to visit. It doesn't say anything about when they arrived. It doesn't say anything about what their names were, but over the centuries, various stories and myths build up legends about who they were and where they came from and the gifts that they brought. That was all added later to the story that originally appeared in the Bible. And what the Epiphany celebrates, what the appearance is that is being talked about, is Jesus' appearance in the world. That's what the Epiphany is about. So that is a very brief story about the meaning that's given to January the 6th, which is 12 days after Christmas. I saw somebody counting on their hands to make sure it was 12 days. Actually, it starts from December 24, 25, and then you count forward 12 days to get to January 5, 6. And those are the 12 days of Christmas. Now, in the olden days, there were some other things associated with Epiphany. One was, there are lots of them, but I'm only going to mention one. One was that you put your Christmas tree up on Christmas Eve, and you took it down on January the 6th, on the 12th day of Christmas. And you know what? That's what my wife still does. She puts our Christmas tree up on Christmas Eve, and it comes down today on Epiphany. So that's not so much about a religious meaning of Epiphany. It's more of a popular celebration that's part of what happens at Christmas time. Now, Epiphany, as I've already mentioned, there are 12 days. It's sometimes also called Twelfth Night. Anybody ever heard that word, Twelfth Night? Anybody ever heard of a play by William Shakespeare called Twelfth Night? Okay, well, he wrote that in 1601. How many years ago is that? That's more than 400 years ago, isn't it? Long time ago. So that's one thing that relates to Twelfth Night. There's another one, and maybe more people in this room are familiar with this other aspect of Twelfth Night. Anybody here ever heard of a song called The 12 Days of Christmas? You've heard that song? Maybe you've sung that song? Now, it is a very old song. It was first written down in 1780, and that's 233 years ago. That's even older than I am. But before it was written down, people were singing it for a very long time. Now, you're going to have to put up for just a moment with my trying to sing part of that song. It goes like this. On the first day of Christmas, my true love gave to me a partridge in a pear tree. You ever heard that song before? Yeah, you've heard it before. And then, for each of the 12 days, there are other gifts that are given. So, what is it that's given on the second day of Christmas? Anybody remember? Yes. Two turtle doves. And then on the third day of Christmas, three French hens. And on the fourth day of Christmas, yeah, four collie birds. Some people say calling birds, but collie birds is another word for blackbird. And originally the song was about collie birds. And then after the four collie birds, on the fifth day are five golden rings. And it goes ahead, sixth day, six geese a-laying. Seventh day, seven swans a-swimming. Eighth day, eight maids a-milking. Ninth day, nine ladies dancing. Tenth day, 10 lords a-leaping. 11th day, 11 pipers piping. And the 12th way, 12 drummers drumming. Man, wow. What a lot of gifts for the 12 days of Christmas. And can you imagine what it must have sounded like with all of those people dancing and singing and jumping around and the birds flying around and singing and making noise? Well, there you have it. That's two of the stories about this day today, Epiphany, the 12th day of Christmas. And you can perhaps remember those facts as you go forward from today. So now it is time to go to RE classes. Do we have somebody that's going to carry out? Okay, you want to come up and get the lantern? And as we go out, we will all sing together hymn number 414 as the RE people leave, as we leave this friendly place. Thank you.
As noted in the order of service, now is the time when we invite all to share their great sorrows or profound joys with the congregation. If you choose to share, please raise your hand and an usher will bring you a microphone. Please briefly tell us your name and your joy or concern that you wish to share. And I will light a candle to represent your joy or concern. In this sharing, may our sorrows be lightened and our joys multiplied. First, I will light the memorial candle to acknowledge the many conflicts in our world. May a peaceful resolution to them be found.
I'm Joanne, and two candles, one for a friend of the church, Tracy Langan, and her son, Derek. It's been a year since Cody died today. And for another friend whose daughter, Christina Guild, has been missing for a week.
Hi. Angel, my mom has been really sick through the holidays, and she's back in bed today, and we're just really concerned for her. So any prayers or energy you send, she's a sweet, sweet woman who baked a cake we're all going to eat today. As an unrelated news, I've made it a half a century, and I survived. And she had baked a really lovely chiffon cake with real French buttercream frosting. So just to prove you how lovely a woman she is, it should be good. And, thank you.
This is Yvonne. I have the cold, so steer clear of me. When you talk about epiphany, to me it is with something with great understanding, and I don't know where I got that definition, but I'd like a candle for the times we have great understanding. We have, the Buddhist, Paul Norton talked about the non-toothache. When you're feeling well and things are going fine, you don't contemplate, but when you have a cold and you're feeling really, it brings you back to being grateful for the many, many wonderful things we have that we just aren't aware of usually.
Hi, I'm John, and just one candle will be sufficient, but a candle of joy that our children all arrived safely for the holidays, that we had the time together we did, and they all got back home safely.
I'm Sherry. A candle of concern for my sister's new father-in-law, who just went through a quadruple bypass, and before that their family lost my sister's sister-in-law to a 5 or 6 year battle with breast cancer.
I will light one final candle for all the joys and concerns we hold in our hearts.
Let us join together in a period of meditation and reflection. Our spirits are joined in these brief moments as we enter together a quiet time of mindfulness and reflection of meditation and prayer. We see life-giving and life-serving connections. All our relationships of privilege and responsibility, which support and sustain us each and all. All the relationships which connect and which uphold the world. We long to be thoughtfully connected within ourselves to the realm of our inner being and well-being. And our inner being and well-being require occasions of active engagement with others. And with others, we require involvement in the world we all inhabit. We also require times of quiet and thoughtfulness, times to restore our hearts, times to renew our souls, times to refresh our intellects. We long too to be connected with others, with families, with friends, acquaintances, with our colleagues in work and profession, with concerned and active citizens in our communities and throughout the world. In all these ways, we seek to discern and to engage the many extraordinary opportunities that inhabit life's every ordinary moment and occasion. Each and every day, here lie life's sacred dimension. Each and every day, here lie our shared religious opportunities and witness. Each and all, we are life's co-creators. Each and all, we are partners in bringing sacred possibility to life. May this common religious faith be our religious practice day by day. And now in silence, let us each continue in this spirit of meditation and reflection and prayer. Amen. Let us join together in singing hymn number 128, For All That Is Our Life.
Our readings today are two poems by Archibald MacLeish. The first is called Tricked by Eternity, the Heart. Corruptible if all things are, corruption yet has eyes to see. Dead for 100 years, the star still burns for us above the tree. Between the cause and the effect, time, like the custom of the street, teaches our eyes till they expect what is no longer theirs to meet. Teaches our eyes until the face that smiles in mirrors when we smile, still young, still fair, still full of grace, stands for our aging hearts a while. The second is called With Age Wisdom. At 20, stooping round about, I thought the world a miserable place, truth a trick, faith in doubt, little beauty, little grace. Now at 60, what I see, although the world is worse by far, stops my heart in ecstasy, God, the wonders that there are.
We just heard two poems by Archibald MacLeish. In the first, Tricked by Eternity, the Heart, MacLeish addresses the contrast of youth and age as our interior personal experiences. And he beseeches, time teach our eyes till they expect what is no longer theirs to meet, until the face that smiles in the mirror when we smile, still young, still fair, still full of grace, stands for our aging hearts a while. You and I, all of us, young and old alike, are aging. And yet, we anticipate seeing in the mirror a youthful image of ourselves. In our mind's eye, we imagine a visage that may no longer exist. And as MacLeish suggests, it stands for our aging hearts a while. This is the interior side, the personal side of aging. And then in With Age Wisdom, MacLeish speaks to the exterior or public side of aging. At 20, stooping round about, I thought the world a miserable place, truth a trick, faith in doubt, little beauty, less grace. Now at 60, what I see, although the world is worse by far, stops my heart with ecstasy. God, the wonders that there are. The wonders that there are. As you can plainly see, this MacLeish poem provides our sermon title this morning. And you may wonder, why this topic? Why this morning? Now, I could offer as a plausible explanation that I am struck by the poem's contrast between the negative perspective of youth and the positive perspective of maturity. And I am, but that is not the first explanation. Or I could offer as a plausible explanation that the beginning of a new year is a sharp reminder of the passage of time between youth and maturity. And indeed it is. But that neither is the first explanation. Or I could offer as a plausible explanation that the poem points out that youth is moved more by the rational, the facts, the analytical, the matters of the intellect, and maturity looks more to the spirit, to emotion, to the intuition, to the heart, to affirmation. And that too is also true, but it is not the first explanation either. The wonders that there are, why this topic this morning? Well, here is the true explanation. Friday, January the 4th, 2 days ago, I celebrated my 78th birthday. 78th birthday. To be sure, my birthday is more than 15 years longer than MacLeish's 60, which brought him to write his poem, but this only intensifies my growing sense of wonder and astonishment, my affirmation of heart-stopping ecstasy. At 78, the world and my life in it are gracious, precious wonders. Each decade, each year, each day arrives for me as a gift of grace. And the procession of days come one after another, each offering opportunities to savor the world and to serve the world. At 78, I am keenly aware that my lifetime is limited. In the words of Psalm 90, 70 years is the span of our life, 80 if our strength holds. So teach us to know how few are our days that our minds may learn wisdom. Well, at 78, my strength holds up pretty well. I am still vigorously active. Professionally, I serve this congregation as your interim ministry. As a volunteer, I serve on the Antioch College Alumni Board. I am a member of the Unitarian Universalist Association's nominating committee. I am active in the leadership of the Living Legacy Civil Rights Pilgrimage, just to mention some of my activities. I act as an official or unofficial mentor to a number of ministry students and young ministers. And I find great satisfaction still in preparing sermons and leading Sunday worship. I even find satisfaction in working with the church's board and its committees. I'm active in ministry groups. I participate in the ceremonial occasions of ordination and installation, in retirements, in building dedications, and in congregational anniversaries. But at 78, I wonder, how long will I continue? How long will my physical, emotional, intellectual strength hold? How long will I have the drive and the desire to continue? Now, from day to day, I live as if it will continue, but I have reached a point in my life where I no longer count on it continuing. At 78, I know that my life could end any time. It could end in an instant by health failure or by an accident. Or I could receive a death sentence of weeks, months, or a year from terminal illness. I live as if my life will continue, even as I know it can end any time, even as I know it cannot continue indefinitely. At 78, I may have just one more day, or one more year, or 5 years, or maybe 10 years, which will get me well beyond the 80 years of Psalm 90. I may even have more than that. My father lived to 85 and my mother to 89. Who knows, with modern health care, if of course I have any health care, I may live until 100. If I live one more day or 20 more years, at 78, I experience the deep felt ecstasy that Archibald MacLeish celebrates. God, the wonders that there are. The wonders that there are. At 78, I know that I live best when I love life most, however many days or years I have before me. And conversely, I know too, I live best when I fear death least, whatever few or many days or years lie before me. At 78, I know this central and crucial caution. Life must be lived even in the midst of all its horrors, and indeed we know it has many. And this affirmation of my religious faith stands even when I cannot fathom it or offer adequate explanation for it. My love of life stands without any attempt to explain or explain away the life horrors we inevitably encounter both in our lives and in the world. My faith calls me not to explain, not to understand, but in human solidarity to respond through acts of compassion and acts of justice, through broad community efforts to transform the world toward a great vision of peace and equality and cooperation. At 78, I know another caution too. Preoccupation with the fear of death disrupts and interferes with my love of life. Another affirmation of my religious faith is grounded in courage and confidence, even in the face of the unknowable reality of death. Courage and confidence is in service of a love of life, which includes all of the years of my living. And it also embraces the ongoing life, the life before I was born, and the life that will exist after I die. My love of life stands without attempting to explain the unexplainable or to deny the uncertainty represented by death. At 78, I know these life issues I face are universal. You and I face them. You and I face them together. Everyone faces them. In whatever manner we address life, death, and the love of life, the issues are abiding and common for all of us who live and who must die and who seek to love life and one another while we are here. These past few weeks, as my 78th birthday approached and arrived, I carried on an internal dialogue about this birthday. And I also observed carefully the response of others to my birthday. A typical conversation went something like this: Jim, I hear this is your birthday. Well, yes, it is. That's wonderful. What birthday is it? It's my 78th birthday. 78? You're 78? I never would have guessed that you are that old. I thought maybe you were 65 or maybe in your late 60s. Now, how is one supposed to respond to that? Well, my response was usually something like this: Oh, thank you. I'm so glad that I don't look that old. But the truth is, I don't really object to being 78. I don't even know that 78 is supposed to be old and supposed to look old. I don't know if I'm entitled to be pleased that I look younger, or that if I do, I can take any credit for it. What is revealed in the compliment, "You don't look that old," and my response of gratitude, "Oh, thank you," that's a common attitude. We devalue age and the aging person in favor of youth and a youthful appearance. It is no wonder that so many of us are obsessed with looking younger or pleased when we are complimented for looking younger than we are. Well, this attitude is neither inevitable or necessary. We could value, we can value every age stage for its own unique qualities and opportunities. Each of our lifetimes begin with birth, and we all pass through the same stages until whatever time our life's in. Each stage of our development and experience offers us unique tasks and important opportunities. The sense of open-ended opportunities and choices is a special province of the earlier stages, especially for youth and young adults. And as a person matures, making family choices, education choices, career choices, options that were once open become closed. But just as important, as we become older and more experienced, other opportunities and other choices open up. Examples abound. Our breadth and depth of experience increases. And so does our capacity to keep success and failure in proper perspective. Long-time friendships become possible for us. Mentoring younger friends and colleagues becomes an option for us. Appreciation of our gifts and acceptance of our limitations become more realistic. our capacity grows to accept adversity. Our declining energy and the effects of aging can be met with humor and dignity and magnanimity. Our capacity increases to marshal our energies for those important matters, and just as important, to relinquish unimportant matters, and most to the point, to know the difference between what is important and what is not important. A life perspective such as this, one which affirms every life stage, one which affirms each person in every stage, one which affirms the unique and valuable work to be done at that particular age, is a religious life perspective, whether or not we consider ourselves religious. And in this perspective, I hear familiar echoes from our liberal religious tradition. For example, in that statement, we affirm and support the inherent worth and dignity of every person. No age limitation there, is there? This affirmation is integral to our liberal religious perspective. It enhances and supports the important meanings of all lives at all ages, the meaning of our life at whatever age we are, and the unique and indispensable work to be done at every life stage and age. Religiously, we cannot accept the indignity and the injustice of denigrating and devaluing any age or any person, whether they be young or mature. Well, at 78, I have a lifetime of experience and memories. You can rest assured I won't share all of them this morning. These range across the full spectrum of my life, beginning with my earliest recollections, coming up to and including this very moment. And as I reflect on my life, I find numerous satisfactions. And I also find a number of regrets. And I know that I still have life work to be done. And for the most part, I am at peace with who I am, with what I have done, with what I have left undone, and what I still have to do. And most important, I know I live each moment blessed by the unearned grace of the world. In MacLeish's words, God, the wonders that there are. Among the many graces that have come my way is the poetry of Czeslaw Milosz. He is one of the profound poets of the 20th century. He lived in and through the full range of events in that blessed and blighted time. He grew up and became an adult in Europe as a Pole with Lithuanian descendants. He lived through the horror and the dislocation both of World War I and World War II. And then he experienced the deep divisions of the Cold War. And in his mature years, he came to America, teaching and writing at the University of California, Berkeley. And then in 1980, he received the Nobel Prize for Literature. Late in his life, Milosz wrote a poetic paragraph entitled Awakened. And as I reach 78, Milosz speaks to me, and for me too. Here are his profound words, a gift of wisdom offered to each of you. In advanced age, my health worsening, I woke up in the middle of the night and experienced a feeling of happiness so intense and perfect that in all my life I had only felt its premonitions. And there was no reason for it. It didn't obliterate consciousness. The past which I carried was there, together with my grief, and it was suddenly included, was a necessary part of the whole. As if a voice were repeating, "You can stop worrying now. Everything happened just as it had to. You did what was assigned to you, and you are not required anymore to think of what happened long ago." The peace I felt was a closing of accounts and was connected with the thought of death. The happiness on this side was like an announcement of the other side. I realized that this was an undeserved gift, and I could not grasp by what grace it was bestowed on me. Well, like Miloš, in my own life, I realize I am the recipient of an undeserved gift, and I too cannot grasp by what grace it was bestowed upon me. My faith, my confidence, is that we can and we will be found by this mysterious gift of grace, which finally we have no words to describe. And my prayer is that whatever our age, whatever our experience, whatever our condition, whatever our expectation, when this grace arrives, we will be open to this epiphany, open to its presence, and open to its work in our lives. Amen.
Thanks, Jim. We have a few moments for a polylog. If anybody has comments or insights they wish to share, you can raise your hand and ushers will bring you a microphone. And Jim, of course, will be available after the service, after the class, after the service.
Hi, Angela again. My birthday too was January 4th.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. And I used to hate my birthday because it meant the holidays were over when I was a kid. Now that I'm older, I love my birthday because it means the holidays are over. Happy birthday to me. See, everyone understands. I look at it as not like, oh my God, I'm 50. It's like, I didn't really earn this because there's a certain level of maturity and responsibility that goes along with being old that sometimes I wonder if I possess. But I'm always grateful to hear, well, you don't look like you're that old, or you look good for that age, and stuff like that is nice. But I look forward to being older. I didn't have a great first 50, so I think the next 50 should be pretty pristine. And that's what I'm going for.
This is Cass. I just had my birthday too, January 3rd. And what I realized this birthday, quite different from all the rest of the birthday, I gave myself alternative healthcare specialist, a good exam. So that was my birthday to myself. and went out with one of my girlfriends. We've been knowing each other since college and had a great food at Odd Dog in Oak Creek. And then I just finished a book called Audacious Aging. I thought that book fit where I am extremely well, and contemplating what my life will be like from this point forward. And what I realized about difference in culture, in Japan, the age, the older you are more respected. And we just don't think of aging as, you know, people in Okinawa, there's many, many centenarians living there. And you look at them and you just look like they are 60s and 70s, but they're 100 years old. And they actually, children fight over who gets to live with grandparents who has got to that point in their life with wisdom. And they honor that. And so I was thinking on my birthday, audacious living and aging, audacious aging. And I wish I could be that person with the wisdom.
Thank you for the sermon, in the sense that it really hit pretty deeply for me. I think a lot of folks would probably argue or agree that the United States is pretty much caught up in a youth culture, and I have to say for a lot of years I tried really hard to hang on to being youthful, or whatever that means, and more recently I feel like I've given that up, which has been a huge relief. It's like I don't worry about certain things like that anymore. But what I've switched in my mind is to trying to be healthy. There's a difference there. It's just trying to eat better, get better sleep, keep working on that one, trying to do things to reduce my stress. So it's a huge, I mean, in some respect, to be able to look, like I've changed things that differently, but in my mind I have, in my heart I have, just trying to invest more time in my family, my friends, and the things, you know, that mean more to me. So I don't fear getting older. I don't regret getting older. It's kind of exciting in some ways. There's, like you say, other opportunities that come up. One little example of that, at my work, I used to look up to the folks who were more senior at my work, but they've since retired, whatever, moved on, and I've gotten older, and I sort of sense that some of the younger folks coming in look to me a bit. I wasn't looking for that, but it seems to have come my way just the sheer years that I've been around at work. And it's been nice, you know, a bit of the mentoring, you might say. So it's just sort of an unforeseen, unlooked for little benefit of having gotten older. It's kind of satisfying. So it's been good, I think.
Thank you. One more here, Barb. Go ahead. Today is our monthly food pantry collection, so any loose donations will go to the food pantry. Checks can be made out to LCUUC with the amounts specific to the food pantry and for LCUUC noted on the memo line. We come to this place because we love what exists here. The church is a living entity, and like all living things, it must have nurture and sustenance. Its breath and its heartbeat, its life itself,
can only be derived from its living components, us. The offering will now be received. Join in our congregational affirmation number 654. We'll do this as a responsive reading. You have the italics. This is called impassioned clay. Deep in ourselves resides the religious impulse. We have religion when we stop deluding ourselves that we are self-sufficient, self-sustaining, or self-derived. We have religion when our hearts are capable of leaping up at beauty, when our nerves are edged by some dream in the heart. We have religion when we look upon people with all their failings and still find in them good, when we look beyond people to the grandeur in nature and to the purpose in our own heart. Please rise as you are willing and able to join in singing hymn number 295.
Searchers in the soul's deep yearning.
forth now with assurance that you are held in the embrace of this loving community. Go now with confidence that you bring the power of compassion and love, justice and peace to restore the weary world. Go forth now with conviction that we each and all contribute toward the well-being of the earth and the welfare of all its people. Amen.